Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another My Investing Story. Hi, my name is Ann McMillan. I am the Master Builder, helping you to build a stronger and better life and business. And today, again, we are bringing you the very best on behalf of hashtag My Investing Story. Ione McMillan and myself are volunteers with the Better Investing Organization, which is a 501c3 not-for-profit organization that has helped over 5 million individual investors from all walks of life learn how to improve their financial future. I call it financial empowerment because we are empowering people with financial information for financial education. But today, our special guest, and I want to say that because we are actually doing business together, but I wanted to just make sure that I shared with you a little about our organization. So we'll get to our guest. But Ione and I are volunteers with the Southeast Florida Chapter of Better Investing. We are not stockbrokers. We're not selling anything. We are not day traders. We are not investing or suggesting penny stocks or anything like that. Our goal here is to bring you financial information and stories from regular individual investors from all walks of life. And so to introduce our special guest to you today, Mr. Gerald Grant, I would have to say Gerald Grant III. Yes, Gerald Grant III, growing up with his father in the financial services industry, Gerald Grant II is actually our financial planner, actually. And Gerald Grant, both father and son, have basically, I would say, invested their time, talent, and treasure in providing financial literacy information. And from a very young age, Gerald Grant III is going to share his story, but I think it's just an amazing way to live and leave a legacy. So with that, I'm going to introduce none other than my awesome co-partner here on this show, Ms. Ione McNeil. How are you today, Ione?
I'm good, thank you.
Awesome, awesome. So it's all on you.
Hey, Gerald, what's going on, man?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, good. Now, you said you're back down in Miami. When did you leave D.C.?
So I left D.C. in 2016, so I've been down here in Miami since then. I moved back down to help my dad with the practice. So I've been here since. Now that things are going pretty well, I've got my stripes under my belt. We're actually expanding offices up to the D.C. area. So, yeah, we're getting ready to relocate back up that way, me and my wife.
Okay. How soon do you think y'all will move back up there?
So, in a matter of, by the end of the year, right now we have contract on a place that's supposed to close in a couple of weeks. And then slowly start the transition. And probably towards the end of the, about December, we're kind of waiting on, because I don't know if you know, I just had a baby. So,
see, I can tell with the When was she born?
She was born August 13th.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
She'll be 8 weeks on Thursday.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, so okay. We're waiting on her to kind of build up her immune system, finish out the, finish out my wife's maternity leave and whatnot, and then we'll move up it right after that.
Okay, cool.
I'm sorry, Yana. As a grandparent, I have to ask this question. Y'all just have to bear with me. So is your dad really going to let this granddaughter go?
It was a tough battle, but it had to happen. My mom is probably more, she's probably hurting more than my dad.
She'll probably be on the flight with you when you leave.
Yeah, she's been over here almost every single day since she was born. So she was getting in her time in advance. Before.
Nice. Well, congratulations. you know, in the introduction, we said that you are Gerald Grant III. So, you know, how was it to actually be born into a family where, one, your father is an entrepreneur, but not just any old entrepreneur. He's a financial planner. He's money conscious, success conscious. How was it growing up in that type of environment and household for you as a child? How did it shape your perspective, development, and relationship to money?
So it was good in more ways than not, but it does come with some caveats to it, right? So we grew up learning about money at a young age and learning what it takes to be successful, not only by example, but by him making us do things, right? Whether it's little things around the house that teach us concepts of responsibility and learning how to do things, being good stewards. He may give you an allowance, but you can't just blow it. You know what I mean? So all of those lessons that you get at a young age that you sometimes take for granted came along with it. But then growing up for me, I kind of faced a battle of being Gerald Grant's son, right? Because everybody knows my dad has a pretty prominent footprint in the Miami community because of his involvement, et cetera. So for me, I wanted to do my own thing. So being young and rebellious at a time when you may not realize what you have in front of you and opportunities, that came along with growing up in that family of success and the push for me to do things certain ways that in hindsight, it was good advice, but as a child, you tend to be more rebellious when you shouldn't be. But I definitely, a lot of the lessons and things that I received growing up have paid dividends to this point in my life. So definitely appreciate those lessons and whatnot growing up.
Yeah, you make a really good point. I think that it's interesting how, you know, even the Bible says that you train up a child in the way they should go, and when they get old, they won't depart. But really, it's about planting seeds. I call it a backsliding period. You know, we all have it. But whatever it is, whether it be health, whether it be money, but I think that just getting that education in your formative years, at least when you finally do wake up or have the scales uncovered from your eyes, you know where to go. So talk to us about, you know, how you tried to chart your own path. You know, what did you think you were going to do? And you're probably in your early 30s. So, you know, when did you kind of come back around and recognize that you wanted to be in this field of financial education and financial planning?
Yeah, so it's funny that you ask that, because for me growing up, I always went on appointments with my dad when I was real little. I always interned almost every single summer when I was in high school. I had to intern like a few summers in college. And I was doing things, but I wasn't a financial planner at those times, right? Like I would do paperwork or I may sit in a meeting, but not really paying attention, just being a kid. And I didn't really understand the value. So back then I was like, man, that stuff is boring. I was like, yeah, it's cool. You make a lot of money, but it's boring. So for me, I was like, I don't want to do that. I grew up playing sports, so I always either wanted to be an athlete or work in sports. And I want to say my sophomore year in college, I had a couple internships. I used to intern.
And you went to Hampton?
Yeah, I went to Hampton.
In Virginia, so, okay.
Yeah, so I used to intern a little bit with various sports. I had an internship with the Orange Bowl when I used to come home for the breaks. And then I looked at getting sports internships while I was at Hampton. And it got to a point where I used to see the kids, the people that were working at the Orange Bowl, and like majority of the interns, they were doing it for free. And then even the people that did have a job that were there, they had to really work hard to get to a point where you can maintain that lifestyle. And I remember one lesson that my dad told me when I was like my sophomore, junior year, he was like, you can either, he said, you can do something real fun or you can do something that you may not think is as fun. And then you can afford to do the things that you want in your off time for fun.
Woo!
At home with you. And
can you say that again, please, just in case somebody missed it on the social media?
He said, you can do something that's fun, or you can do something that may not be as fun that you enjoy, that can give you the income that you need to afford to do the things that you want that are fun. So that really hit home for me. And that's when I was still in my rebellious days at that time. So that's when I was like, all right, I don't want to go in sports because I'm probably not going to be able to maintain the lifestyle I want to live. So at that point, that's when I transitioned to take a job at corporate America. And I worked at Deloitte for about 3 years. And at that time, I was doing tech consulting. And I enjoyed it, but one of the things for me was because it was a technology-driven environment, I had to do so much just to remain competitive because I have a business background. So for me, it was like, man, I'm doing all this stuff, and they want me to learn all these coding languages, and it's not really enjoyable for me. And then the other thing that really hit home for me was I worked in D.C., and my project was in Maryland, and my partner was – from Chicago, but he was in D.C. from Monday through Thursday, and he had kids in high school with games and et cetera and whatnot. And I was like, I know for a fact that's not the lifestyle I want to live when I'm his age. So at that point, I started doing some soul searching, and I prayed about it, and God brought me back home. And I've been back here since 2016, and I've had the flexibility to create my own business within the firm, the flexibility to, for example, my daughter was born. I took off the first 6 weeks of her life to stay home with my wife while she's also on maternity leave. So it's not too many careers that you can have flexibility, create your own time, all of those things. So everything that I wanted to do while still being able to impact others while I do it was in this career. And that's what I found in 2016. And ever since then, I've really realized the impact and the freedom that I have. And since then, I've never looked back.
That's nice. One of the things that your history is actually reminding me of is how much we take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And so just because, you know, you are the child of somebody that was in the finance industry or is an entrepreneur and is also a financial planner, were you doing things on your own as a kid? How young were you when you remember investing on your own? Because I think sometimes when you come from a privileged background or your parents want to do the best for you or do the best by you, they end up doing things for you without keeping you in the loop. So kind of talk to us about how your mother and father kept you in the loop of things, and then when you started to do investing and stuff like that on your own.
So, that's a good point, because we see that often, like when you come from money, like you don't want to expose the kids too much because you don't want to spoil them. But at the same token, like you said, it creates that sense of you're doing too much for them where they're not really learning those concepts that they need to be successful. So I think my parents did a good job of like blending the two. Like I wasn't doing the most at a young age, but they did give me opportunities to learn and explore different opportunities. For example, at a very young age, they set up savings accounts for me and my sister. So we would save when we got Christmas gifts and different things like that. And the other thing, at a young age, we each had our own TD Ameritrade account where we can buy whatever stocks we wanted. So with the money that we saved, we can buy what we wanted. And I just remember at a young age, my dad always told me the first way to learn about investing is buy things that you like. So back then, I loved sneakers. So I bought Nike at a young age, and I didn't like Home Depot, but my dad used to take me there so much, I was like, I probably should buy this. So I bought Home Depot at a young age, and just starting with little things like that I knew was where I started that journey of investing.
Excellent. So would you, even outside of your profession, your career, your business, how would you describe you as an investor and your philosophy as an investor?
So for me right now, I'm very passive and long-term driven. Like the one thing that grinds my gears, especially through COVID, is this uproar of everybody wants to trade options.
Everybody, man.
Rich overnight and whatnot. And I think it's You may make some money and you may learn how to do it, but in the long run, I think you're going to lose a lot more than you'll gain if you don't really understand the concepts, right? Because when you think about most people trade options as a way to hedge against investments, not as a primary investment. But nowadays, it's so sexy and attractive and it's something new and people are making a lot of money that they don't understand the difference between trading and investing. So for me, I like to take a more long-term approach. Everything that I do now is very systematic. I don't really own a lot of individual holdings. Majority of the stuff that I own is in mutual funds. And I'm trying to diversify into some other asset classes. But for me, I'm very passive, and I don't do a lot of active trading and active management.
Excellent. So my next question, still on this topic, is, do you invest regularly? If so, is it weekly, monthly? And I'm asking these questions because most of the people listening are new to investing. They want to learn how to be a long-term investor. And as you know, we're Better Investing Volunteers. So we promote investing regularly, you know, regardless of what the market is doing. And I don't know if you still own Nike and Home Depot, but, you know, you can also talk to the returns you've seen probably over the years of watching something little grow into something much more.
Yeah, so I had to sell it when I joined the firm in 2016 because you have to register all your outside.
Yeah.
I was like, the hassle of doing all that for the amount of money that was in there, I just liquidated it and let it go. But I wish I still had my Nike stock. But as far as investing, my philosophy is invest early and invest often. And people, you hear it often, if you listen to many of the greats who talk about investing and philosophies, you have to invest early, invest often, even with your children, starting them young. And regardless of wherever you're at in your lives, my dad likes to use the saying, today's the first day of the rest of your life. So treat today as, it doesn't matter what you didn't do in the past, it's about what you can do from here on out. So as far as what I do, I'm putting aside something that leaves everyone, because for me, we take a very passive approach. Like I believe in having a strong emergency savings before you start investing, because if you invest too early without emergency savings, you're going to end up tapping into it. And it's almost like the people on the highway in the cars where you're sitting in rush hour traffic and you're going from lane to lane, but you end up at the same point as the person that was just driving straight lane. So definitely having that strong emergency fund. But once you get to a solid emergency fund of 3 to 6 times, you should be investing everything over that and often, because at the end of the day, your money's got to keep up with inflation. So if you're not investing it, it's losing money. So I definitely believe in having that foundation, but too much liquidity can cost you money.
Very much so. And I like that. Invest early, invest often. What do you do in order to educate yourself regularly? And I want your honest answer because, you know, like you said, we're right now living through not necessarily a generation, but definitely through some times where people really don't know the difference between trading and investing. Mm-hmm. And if your foundation is solid, to me, you don't have to do that much work, which I think goes to your point of being a long-term passive investor. So just talk to us about how did you educate yourself on what you know just as a general investor, not necessarily specific to needing to be a financial planner, but, you know, to the regular, you know, Joe or Mary that's listening, what could they do? What resources could they use to better their knowledge base?
Yeah, so there's definitely tons of books out there that you can learn that talk about just basic investing and basic finances. I think before you even start investing, you should just have a basic understanding of financial literacy, understanding a budget, understanding saving. All of those things are so important and so crucial before you even start investing. I like to use the analogy. It's like people love to do the sexy stuff like investing before they learn the foundation. But the problem is without the foundation, the sexy stuff will never work. It's like if there's any sports fans, I like to use the analogy of football, right? So when you think of if any, whatever side of the ball you play on, they teach you either block or tackle. Regardless of what play you run, if you don't block or tackle, it's not going to work. Your blocking and tackling is your emergency fund, your savings, your budgeting, and then the sexy play calls is the investing. But if you do the first two right, it don't matter what you invest in, you're going to make money because you're going to have more. And if you have it in the right if you have it in the right stock, or if you just put in a regular mutual fund or index fund, you'll make money over the long term and understanding those fundamentals. So there's definitely a lot of books out there, Richest Man in Babylon, that teaches you the basics, how to create financial wealth from that. There's a bunch of resources out there that you can use to kind of learn. And then if you want to get a little bit more details, I know one thing that I refer some clients to that want to learn just about the basics of investing. I know Morningstar has a financial classroom that talks about the basics of understanding asset classes, how to invest. It's a good free resource that you can take advantage of to just learn the fundamentals of investing.
Excellent, excellent. My other question really is, when somebody comes to see you, and I want you to pick whatever scenario that you think will resonate the most, but what is one of the most frequent missed things when somebody schedules an appointment with you and they want to get on the right track? Because I think sometimes we get blindsided with, like what you said, you know, blocking and tackling, taking care of the little stuff. But is there something else that kind of blindsides us despite it being right in front of us?
As far as overall finances and things that they should be doing, or as far as meeting with a financial professional?
The former, the first one.
I think the thing that really blindsides the most people is everybody thinks they got to come in there with their stuff together. Like, people don't like to have a messy home and open up and say, hey, I need help. Like, that's the first side. Like, people don't go to the doctor when they're healthy. You go to the doctor because you're sick and you want a cure. So the same thing in the financial world. Like, you don't have to have it all together. Like, it's okay. You'd be surprised. There's tons of people who don't have their – majority of the people that come to see me don't have their stuff together. So you're not the only one. So not being ashamed to have that conversation and just understanding that, like I said earlier, today's the first day of the rest of your life. You can't change what you didn't do before, but you can change what you do from here on out. And today's a great day to start doing something different, right? And that's one thing that people – they're like, man, I got so much debt, or man, I haven't invested and I'm 50. Man, I haven't put anything away from retirement. All right, so what are you going to do tomorrow? How are you going to start to carve out funds to put away for tomorrow? What are you going to do to create additional income? Or what are you going to do to decrease your expenses so now you have an extra $500 a month to save? And that's the biggest thing, because a lot of times people think that they don't have the resources to do what they want to do, but in actuality, all you got to do is shift a few things and you can make it happen. So I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions that people have. Like, just because it's not together today doesn't mean you can't get it together tomorrow.
Wow. Wow. I think that's excellent advice. And you really bring it home, because you don't have to get stuck in the past. You know, I mean, forgive yourself for what you don't know. You can't even hold yourself accountable for that. But like you said, I mean, today is the first day of the rest of your life. If you get started now, you know, you can really make some moves. And that brings me actually to another question, which is, how do you see people, you know, potential clients, current clients, overestimate the time it takes to get right, or underestimate the time they think they're going to get there? Because I find that when people are trying to get from here to there, they may do one or two of those things, you know, be unrealistic, like,
yeah.
I'm starting from zero, but I want $1 million portfolio in 5 years. And then also like, oh, well, I got this debt or I got such and such, it's going to take me 20 years to get out of it. So just, you know, if you could speak to both of those sides.
Yeah, I mean, I think the main thing is just setting a level expectation. I think either or is just your expectations don't align with your reality. So for the clients that are overachievers, sometimes you just got to bring them back to earth. Like sometimes it just is what it is. And we tell clients, I'm not a miracle worker, and the numbers are what they are. You may not like the information, but these are what the numbers are. So these are the things that we can do differently to help get you there. But it may not be as clear of a path as you think it is. And then for the clients that think that it's going to take a lot longer, for them, it's more of an encouragement. It's like, hey, we're putting this plan in place. You thought it would have took this long, but if you do X, Y, and Z, you can actually get there a lot sooner. And then once you get there sooner, here's all the other things that you can do that you wanted to do. So for them, it's more of encouragement. And for the people who have unrealistic expectations, it's more about just bringing them back to reality and letting them know, hey, we gotta align reality with expectations. I can't work miracles, but we can help you achieve your goals. It may not be tomorrow, but we can get you there.
Okay, cool. Ms. Ann?
Yes, I wanted to just remind everyone that may have just come on that we're talking tonight to a special, he's special to me, especially because you're dad and we have an account with you. And so today, I just want to make sure everybody knows this is Gerald Grant III. If you're looking for someone to help you with your financial planning, no matter where you are in the United States, if you can't do it, he can hook you up. Right, Gerald?
Mm-hmm.
And so he's our special guest tonight, but just a little bit more about him. After a brief stint in corporate America, Gerald decided to join his father in his practice, helping individuals create wealth that will last for generations. And that brings me to your shirt.
Mm-hmm.
You can share with us, share the shirt, and then share with us what is that about in terms of generational wealth. Let me just stop there because I want to just make sure that we all understand that there's a difference in having it now and leaving it. But mm-hmm. also for those who may have just come on, we're talking about hashtag My Investing Story with Gerald Grant III. Better Investing is a 501c3 not-for-profit organization. I want to just keep saying we're not selling any stocks. We're not selling any bonds. We're not recommending anything. We're just volunteers, Iona McMillan and myself. And we are bringing to you every single week the best that there is, just regular people sharing their own investing story. And so tonight our special guest is Gerald Grant III, and he's going to share with us his shirt he has on and what is it about that shirt that we need that you'd like for us to know, please.
And for all that can't see it, it says, I'm building generational wealth.
Yeah, so the premise of the shirt, so my father and I actually wrote a book called The Power of Generational Wealth. And what really prompted us to write the book, my dad back in 2012 wrote his first book, Bold Moves to Creating Financial Wealth, which talks about if you're not there yet, how do you get there? So the basics of financial literacy. And in working with clients over 25 years, he noticed that especially for our demographics and the people in our communities, a lot of them were first-time wealthy individuals, right? So a lot of them were trying to figure out, all right, I've accumulated it. I never had anything to leave behind, but now there's an opportunity for me to leave something behind to the next generation. So what do we do? And it's an interesting conversation because a lot of us, because of the fact that we're first-generation wealthy individuals, you get two ends of the spectrum, right? You get one end of the spectrum that's like, I completely have no idea what I should do. And then you have the other end of the spectrum that's like, I had to work for everything I have. So I gave my kids an education. I raised them till they were 18 so they could figure out the rest. I'm not worried about leaving nothing behind. So we just wanted to create some content to just reshape the way we think about generational wealth and just start that conversation, not only within our community, but within anybody who really wants to tap into that conversation and understand the power of generational wealth and the difference that it can make on the lives of not only your kids, but your kids' kids and the kids' kids and beyond. Because statistically, even when you think at other wealthy families, 70% of wealth dies in the second generation. And there's a lot of things that play into that. But one of the main reasons of that is the fact that the second generation lacks the knowledge and the wherewithal that it takes to not only receive but inherit, and I mean to receive but maintain that wealth. We've seen it time after time with some of our clients. We had a client, they passed over $1 million to their kids, and within 12 months, they all spent it on it. So, but think about it. It took you your whole life to build up that money and for your kids to get it and spend it in 12 months. So just increasing the knowledge around that. One of the ways we like to describe it is think about getting a brand new shiny car, right? You got your favorite car. You work hard your whole life to get it. And now you're going to just hand the keys off to your kids, right? But if they don't know how to drive, what's the likelihood of them being able to maintain the upkeep of that car and keep it safe and keep it nice and shiny, right? Very, very unlikely. But if along the way you teach them how to drive, when they get it, you're not going to have any worries. And you don't have to teach them how to drive in that. You can teach them, go to a lot, get a hoopty, let them drive around the parking lot. And then when they're ready, you let them drive around, let them get on the main street. And then after that, they can get on the highway and eventually they'll learn how to drive. So the same thing applies with money. And if you start to teach these concepts to your kids, it's not spoiling them, it's exposing them. And then from there, if they're going to get the money anyways, it don't matter whether they're spoiled or not. And if they're spoiled, they're more likely to blow it than if they're exposed to it. So just changing the perspective about generational wealth and encouraging people that it's okay to think about generational wealth and think beyond you, because I don't know about you guys, but I've never seen a U-Haul truck behind a hearse. So you got all this stuff here. You can't take none of it with you. So somebody's going to inherit it. So whether you're a millionaire, whether you got a couple hundred thousand, whether you just have a home, whatever the case may be, if you have anything that's going to be here after you're gone, you have generational wealth. It doesn't have to be millions of dollars. It could be, my grandmother left me a very small amount of like 10 grand, but it was so needed at the time. I had debt that I needed to pay off, and that made a huge difference in my life at that time. And it wasn't millions, but it helped me put me in a position, because that debt could have been dragging me down for years and years, but now I'm in a position, all right, I'm debt free and now I can go build one, right? So it's not about the amount, it's about the opportunity that you present and putting the next generation in the position to be successful and have the resources to do it.
You know, interesting you share that. That's a large part of why we host this show, because we have not really found anybody really talking about this subject that's not selling something. Anybody who's talking about the subject when we're not motivated to sell something and upsell people in the sales funnel or whatever, and just we what people who just started investing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're sharing actually brings to my mind of the whole idea of starting with the end in mind. And actually, Clayson's book, The Richest Man in Babylon, is one of my favorites. So when you said that, I was very excited. But what we want to continue to do is provide resources. So if you have any additional books, we're going to have Michelle. If you would put the, between Marshall and Michelle, the book he's mentioned, if we could put those in the chat on Facebook and also in the Zoom chat for our listeners. But also any websites. You did give us Morningstar, free classes and things like that. I also want to mention Better Investing has an enormous amount of courses. The membership, I'm not sure if it's still the 90-day free membership is still ongoing.
Yes.
So we'll put that information, if you go to betterinvesting.org, at the very bottom of the page, it says 90-day free membership. And it's been 90 days for quite a while now, so please take advantage of that. But like Gerald is saying, there's so many free resources. We don't have to stay back where we were with the lack of knowledge. So Ayuna and I have been focusing on the whole idea of financial empowerment, and that's basically what you're talking about. Because Ayuna, I don't know if she may not remember this, but at 12, 13 years old, she told me, she said, no, Mama, we don't do financial literacy. No, we want to talk about financial empowerment, and that's very long time, because it's a big difference in being financially literate, and people want to talk about literacy and illiteracy, which is, has a negative connotation. But when you talk about being financially empowered through investment education, that's a major mindset shift to really undergird. And we have on here, I'm not sure if he's still on the ball, Glenn and Ion, if you can talk a little in a minute about the youth investment. Stock investment gain from summer, because those are some of the things, Gerald, we've been doing. Going to your point about teaching, it's one thing for us to be blessed because of our family, but there are a lot of families that don't have your dad or Ione's mom, to help them in the family. And so what we're doing, Ione and I, we're broadening that family concept, and anybody who's willing to learn, Ione teaches a phenomenal class within Better Investing as a volunteer. Well, we are just doing everything we can to expose information and expose the information to people free.
Mm-hmm.
Free is good.
Yeah, it's definitely needed. I mean, the empowerment piece of it is so crucial, right? Because everything that we do revolves around money, right? And understanding the concepts of finances, because at the end of the day, what do we all work for? We all work to attain financial independence. That's the only reason we get up and go to work every day. So one day we don't have to work again. So if you're not working to be financially independent, you're just on a, what's the little thing with the just running?
Treadmill, carpet wheel.
Exactly. Because at the end of the day, that's what you all want. That's what everybody wants. We want independence. We want to be able to make an impact. We want legacy. All of those things come from understanding the concepts of finances. And you can never, I'm not going to say you can never truly enjoy everything you want. You can. Money doesn't buy happiness. But definitely having that understanding of finances and the support and the foundation to give you the ability to really do what you want to do can help with that.
Thank you.
So I have a question that's going back to what you started to end with, and I think that this is really important too, because I'm trying to think back in 08 when I interned at Northern Trust in Chicago. When we think about wills and trusts, we underestimate exactly what you said. When you die, you are leaving stuff behind. Now, whether you consider it valuable or not, that's going to determine the actions you take or don't take. And I think we do all of ourselves a disservice, because if your grandmother would have said, oh, it's only $10,000, it's not a million, it's not much, then that wouldn't have been able to bless you. And I think many of us, we don't even value the $500 we're going to leave in the bank account or in the CD we bought 20 years ago. How important and how easy, what can people do in order to take an assessment of what they have and start to do that planning? Because, yes, we all don't want to die suddenly, but sometimes you don't know when it's coming. And again, if you don't value the little bit that you do have and plan for it, it won't go to benefit those that you know and love. It's going to end up in probate. It's going to end up in the back pages of the financial newspaper. And somebody's going to be able to get it for, pennies on the dollar. So can you just walk us through maybe the resources, what we can do even just tonight to just write something out, and get it in order? Because I will say the other part of it, too, I found is a lot of institutions won't have a conversation with us about it because we don't have enough to entertain them to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you know, it works both ways. We can't find the help because, you know, a lawyer won't pick us up, and then we don't even see our stuff is that valuable to kind of leave a plan behind.
Yeah, so just to touch on the last piece first as far as the importance of it, and excuse my daughter in the background if you guys can hear it, but it's so important to have a will, and just a basic will is so often overlooked. I just had a conversation with a young lady the other day about it. She's 29, but she's a homeowner, and she owns it outright by herself. Right. So in the event that something happens, you can't put a beneficiary on a house. So what happens to your house? Yeah, it goes to your parents, but they got to go to probate, and it costs, and you got to pay an attorney thousands of dollars just to get the house that you already know you want to get to them, when you can write a will for less than that. Right. And then the time it takes to go through probate. So just understanding the concepts of that. And then even little things that people don't understand. So one time we had a client, he had an account. He had pretty much exhausted the account. It was maybe like a couple $100 in it. But guess what? He had to go to probate to get his family had to go to probate to get the $400 out the account, which cost them more than $400 to get it out because they had to go through probate, and they didn't want to just tend to leave it there. So they had to go through probate for that. So putting the protection in place, he could have wrote a simple will, would have passed over. And thinking about the concept of, especially in our community, a lot of us, majority of our largest asset is a home, right? So say you have a home with two kids. One kid wants to keep it, and one kid wants to sell it. Now they're in conflict. So now you've just created family conflict by not putting the plan in place prior to you passing. So now we've seen cases where clients, they don't even talk to their sisters anymore and their siblings because that process was so messy that they don't even communicate anymore. And you could have simply put a will in place and prevented all of that. So the planning piece of it is so important. And then there's other cases where there's stuff out there that they just don't know about because you didn't put it in the will or you didn't plan around it. So a lot of assets, I think, I can't remember the number, but when I was writing the book, there was like $39 billion of unclaimed assets that are just sitting there from people who passed. So understanding that. And then as far as resources, one of the resources that we use with a lot of our clients, that's a free resource, we call it the Family Love Letter. It pretty much walks them through the whole process of estate planning. It talks about what is a will. It talks about what is a living will, what is a pour over will, what is a trust, all of those different things. And then it goes to the details of giving you a place to store all the information. Who are your primary contacts? Who's your financial planner? Who's your insurance person? Who is your health insurance with? Who do you pay your mortgage with? How many times have you seen somebody pass and they can't even figure out how to pay a mortgage? So little things like that, it helps you put all of that in one place and one document for your family to put that together. In our book, we have free resources to help kind of gather information like that. And as far as getting the help in an attorney, I don't recommend it, but there are resources out there where you can write. You can just Google how to put together a simple will, and you can draft it up yourself and sign it and take it to the courthouse. There's also a lot of times people overlook the services provided by their employer. You know how many people have prepaid legal that don't realize that those services pay for a will? And you pay for it every month and don't realize that you have the services, especially like Dade County employees. A lot of them have those services and they don't even realize that they can get those services through that. And don't take advantage of it. So understanding those benefits and whatnot can help as well.
Thank you for adding that to the list of benefits because, you know, on My Investing Story, we talk a lot about, if you haven't already started, go to your employer and just inquire about your 401k, 403b, because there's money being left on the table. No different from you finding out about your healthcare plan, money and resources being left on the table. So thank you for bringing up these lawyer services or legal services that is probably provided by your employer to help you do those personal things. So I would encourage any and everybody, if you are working, please reach out to your employer this week. Find out about the other resources that are available to you as an employee so that you can maximize it and start to get this stuff together. And in order to get your family love letter, do we need to email you? Do we need to go to your website?
You can just contact me directly. I can provide a copy for everybody who's on the call complimenting if you'd like. So just let me know that you are on the call today, and we can provide a copy of that to you all. And I think Michelle is going to share my information. So.
Okay. Thank you for that, Jill. So, yeah, anybody that wants that from Gerald, in the subject line, put hashtag My Investing Story, all one word, participant, and then the body, you know, tell him how much you enjoyed hearing his story on the show and ask him for the family love letter. And I'm really glad you brought up, because that was going to be one of my questions about the family love letter. I think that is a unique offering that you and your dad have crafted and used, because it really is a thought-provoking exercise for you to really just sit down, be still enough to figure out, wow, I've done all this stuff. How can I plan for the next phase of my life and include the next generation or my family, you know, siblings or nieces and nephews, for those of us that don't have our own kids. I know we still want to leave that to someone else. Now, one of the questions in the chat is asking, from your perspective, Gerald, what can be done to create more of a mass movement of financial education and economic empowerment in the Black community?
I used to joke about this, but I was like, man, we got to make a rap song or something about it. And I think that'll help get it to be a little bit more attractive. And I think if you really pay attention to what's going on in pop culture, a lot of artists are starting to be a lot more conscious of the topic. I know Jay-Z kind of started talking about it. Rick Ross has made mentions of it, owning businesses. And there's a lot of people, I know Nipsey talked about it a lot. So there's this big wave within pop culture that is starting to discuss building wealth and making it sexy. And I think that's one of the things that's really going to shift, because unfortunately a lot of us, I'm not going to say we don't have a lot of role models to look up to within our community, but we do. But a lot of times we are, especially the younger generation, they lean towards athletes and whatnot to be the focal point of their perception of successful Black people, when there's so many more Black millionaires and successful people that are out there, like your Ann McNeils, that you can just...
Who are not athletes.
Their stories, who can really... teach you the importance of and what you need to do to become successful and wealthy, and really understand those concepts. But I definitely think a shift in pop culture will help with that conversation. And I think we just have to be more proactive about having a conversation. And I think that's one of the things that we really wanted to push with the book, The Power of Generational Wealth, is we just need to get out there and have the conversation more. Because if we want to see the change in our community, we got to be the one that drives it. And it's not going to be somebody else that comes in and wants to change everything. We have to start having these conversations. We got to start talking more about ownership. We got to start talking about investing more and not having all your money in a savings account or a CD. We have to start having these conversations. And I think the more and more we have it amongst our peers, and more we have it within outreach within our community, we'll start to really see a shift in our culture and in our communities.
Now, the other question I have for you, and I know you spoke on it just a little bit briefly, but what's your financial vision for yourself and your family? Do you have one? If so, what is it?
Yeah, so fortunately for me, I'm married well, so I'm just going to be Chanel's husband.
That's a great life goal, man.
Nah, but to be honest, our vision is within the next 5 to 10 years or so, we really want to be in a position to financially do whatever we want to do. I mean, my biggest thing when I think about what wealth means and what success means, for me, it's freedom and flexibility in my time. I don't know what that dollar amount is yet, but I want to be able to, if I want to go and take a trip and just disconnect, I want to be able to do that. If I want to send my kids wherever, I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to go to dinner without looking at the price tag on the menu. I want to be able to enjoy all of those things and have the wherewithal to do that. So for me, my goal within the next five years or so, continue to build up our practice. We're trying to build our practice between Miami and D.C. to the point where it's self-sufficient, where I can make money when I'm sleeping. My wife is actively building through franchises, so helping put her in a position where she can do the same. So just creating more resources to build passive income is our goal. And the more passive income we have, the more flexibility we have. And then from there, it's just watching the checks come in. So that's our goal over the next 5 to 10 years, just continue to create passive income, continue to empower and give back. I mean, like you talked about earlier, how do we make a difference? I think we are it, right? So how do we empower others to do the same? And that's where ownership comes in. The more businesses you own, the more people you can employ, and the more people you can encourage to do the same. So that's our vision over the next 5 to 10 years, and that's kind of where we're headed.
Now, I didn't have this question planned, but it just came up based on your response. When we last saw each other, or the time before that, a few years ago before you got married, you said something very interesting to me, especially being, you know, a young Black male. I think at the time you were mid to late 20s, and you told me your philosophy on why you got married. Could you share that just a little bit? Because I thought that it was really unique to hear from your perspective, even seeing marriage as, like you kind of joked, marrying up and building wealth through marriage. And I hadn't really heard that perspective from any young black person before. So I know y'all been married a few years, but could you just kind of share that sentiment? Because we don't talk about it much on the show, but I think you have a really unique perspective that other people can appreciate and also learn from.
Yeah, so essentially, we joke about it a lot, but marriage is like a business, right? So when you look for, when you're starting a business, you want a strong business partner that you can, you may not necessarily always be on the same page with everything, but you want to make sure that they're on the same page with their finances. You want to make sure that you guys are building and growing together and doing things like that. And the main reason for that is, especially if you marry young, you're going to spend majority of your life with this person, right? So I know a lot of times we think, especially in our generation, I want to enjoy my young life and have all the fun and get it all out while I can. At the end of the day, the quicker you start to move in one direction, the more you can accomplish. Because if you and your partner can get on the same page and you guys are doing things together, you guys are collectively building and growing and lifting each other up and encouraging each other to reach their full potential, imagine how much you can accomplish, right? So just watching my wife over the last 2 years and the things that she's been able to do and being able to encourage her and support her to do those things, it makes me want to step my game up and encourage me to do, because I feel like I'm not doing enough. So as we build and grow together, we accomplish so much more. And they always say, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And I think that's a perfect analogy when it comes to a marriage, because if you find the right partner and you guys can get on the same page and build and go together, there's so much that you can do and accomplish with you guys can get that one common goal and just work towards it, as opposed to you spend your whole young life chasing around, spending frivolous money, enjoying yourself and doing things that don't really add value or substance, and you think it does, but when you get older, you realize that you just wasted your whole 20s doing nothing, right? So, yeah, you need to have fun and enjoy yourself, but you get to a point where you just realize if you lock in and you find that right person, and then by the time you wait around and do all that stuff, all the good ones gone anyway.
But that's exactly what you said to me last time.
So you can have all the fun you want, but the ones that are focused and driven, they're going to be gone. So now you, what you going
to try to catch them on the second round. I don't know.
Yeah. They get lucky, but I'd rather have my picking at a good one at the first shot than just wait around for the second time.
You know about that first round draft pick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you. I know we're wrapping up. Tell the people a little bit about your book and why they should get it.
Yeah, so The Power of Generational Wealth. It's going to teach you the importance of defining what wealth means to you and how to put a plan in place to create generational wealth for you and your family. A lot of times there's myths and things that hold us back from wanting to put a plan in place. So this book will help demystify some of those things and help you really understand what it takes to put that plan in place, who should be on your team, and how do you do it. So for anybody who has wealth or something to pass on or seeking to build generational wealth, I suggest that you pick it up. There's a lot to learn, and there's resources in there that can help you do that as well. And also, these cool I'm Building Generational Wealth t-shirts, so you can let the world know and be a part of the change, help the conversation, and push the agenda around the importance of generational wealth.
I'm getting my shirt and book tonight. It's already in the cart.
Let's go.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Gerald Grant III, I should say. So there is another Gerald Grant out there. Tell your father, your mother, your sister, we all said hello.
Well, I will.
Great having you. I think that everything you shared was just spot on, and for it to come from where you are and your perspective and your age and your ethnicity and your background, I think it's going to resonate with a whole different group of people. So I'm looking forward to that.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you again so much for all that you've done. And I'm going to get the book too, so make sure you sign my copy.
I got you.
And tell your wife, and congratulations on your baby girl too.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was great. It's always a good conversation when I get together with the two of you all. So I'm just excited to be here and share my story. Thank you for even considering me to be on here. And I hope that for the folks in the audience that you at least took away one thing from the things that I shared with you all. And definitely open to having continuing a conversation. So don't hesitate to reach out. And I'll be able to provide as much resources as I can to help you all achieve your financial goals and create generational wealth.
Thank you, Gerald and Ione. But because the show is, we're also airing this on the radio, I would like to have you to verbally share your contact so those who are listening and cannot see the chat, they can also have a way to reach you. So if it's your website, your email, and or your phone number, however you want people to reach out to you, if you could just share that out.
This is Gerald. You can find me. I'm on Instagram, Gerald Grant III. I'm on LinkedIn, Gerald Grant III. You can reach me by email at gerald3@thegfinancialgroup.com. Also, if you'd like to reach out, you can go to the website, thegfinancialgroup.com. Or to learn more about the book, you can go to powerofgenwealth.com. And all the information on there, all the book information is on there. Also, the Bold Moves to Creating Financial Wealth is on there as well.
Okay, was that T-H-E and the letter G, financial?
Mm-hmm. T-H-E, G, like grants, and then financialgroup.com.
Perfect. And the email is Gerald3@the.
G, financial. Group. And 3 as in the number,
the number three.
Yeah.
Right. Very important. I just want to make sure that people heard that so that those who are listening in the future, because the show is evergreen and there's a possibility that people will be able to reach out to you through the radio show also.
Awesome.
So Ione said, we want to thank you. And if you have any other closing comments, you or Ione, before we wrap up the show, it's been great. Learned a lot. I got 5 pages of notes here, writing away.
Well, the last thing I would just leave folks with is one thing that I mentioned earlier. Today's the first day of the rest of your life. It doesn't matter what you've done in the past. Today is the day that you can start and change and position yourself to achieve the goals and the things that you want. So if you haven't invested, start today. If you haven't saved, start today. If you don't have a will, put it in place tomorrow. Don't let too much time go before you put together a plan, because we've seen too many cases where people say, I'm going to do it tomorrow, I'm going to do it tomorrow, and tomorrow never comes. And just do what you need to do, do what you say you're going to do, and just start. And enjoy it along the way, because life is short.
Thank you. Thank you so very much. Ione, any closing comments from you before we wrap up?
Thank you.
All right. All right, everybody. You've heard it from Gerald Grant III on behalf of Ione and myself. Thank you for joining us on another episode of My Investing Story. And you can reach out to us at betterinvesting.com. Again, this is Ann McNeil, the Master Wealth Builder, helping you to build a stronger and better life and business. And we will see you next Wednesday.
Right. Betterinvesting.org.
Betterinvesting.org, sorry. Betterinvesting.org. Thank you. And you can find us there. Betterinvesting.org. Thank you. Thanks, Ione.
Thanks, all.
Goodbye.